What's good? You're listening to Culture Quest. That's right. That's where we ask the question, why are we like this? On this podcast, we explore culture, but culture that's specific to us, us as Bahamian, us as Black people, us as Caribbean people, all that good stuff. I'm MCK, and I'm here with a homie from Time, Jay. And of course, our boy Poof is here today as well. We're going to talk about all things us, and there's definitely a lot to talk about. As always, shout out to the Solid Network. Now, today we have a special guest with us. This boy is a therapist, life coach, motivational speaker, and he specializes in some of your favorite topic, relationships. Don't get too excited. We're not diving into relationships today, although it's a good opportunity. We need you to spin the block probably as we talk about relationships, but not just yet. Today we're going to talk about mental health. So today's guest is someone dope, Harrison Thompson. Thanks for coming through. Appreciate your time, bro.
Yeah, man. Pleasure's mine. Glad to be here, babe.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, we like to start a podcast off with some show and prove. You know, the show is about Bahamians, it's about culture. So, you know, we like to pull your Bahamian card and see what you're working with. So let's start off with proof today. What Bahamian card, what give you the right to talk about this culture stuff?
There's a lot of different levels of proof, though. Oh, you mean proof?
No, proof, yeah, proof.
But, I ain't talking about no Bush medicine today, Jay. You could be it a little easy. I mean, it have to do with Bush, but not... Anyway, I don't know if this is specific to Bahamians or this is a Caribbean thing, but if you understand the term, go pick your switch, then you know. If you know, you know.
If you know that,
that's all I got to say. I ain't diving into it no more. But let's just say I've been told to pick your switch a dime or two.
Yeah, okay. Okay. What you got, Jay?
As recent as last year, I almost fall off a 16A. Yeah, like I was standing in the bus door and I almost fall off the bus, man. Like, you can't get more Bahamian than having to stand up in the bus.
Wow.
Hold on, so you
yeah,
was
we, in we the need, bus we need door
as
details,
the bus was moving, or you was hopping onto the bus and didn't find your seat yet and the bus took off? Like see, what happened?
You can tell you all your real Bahamians, because everybody know in the morning, if the bus too full, somebody got to stand up in the bus door.
And that somebody is you.
That just happened to be you.
And everybody know buses is race. The 116A getting a tight race with another 16A.
That's it.
And I always fall out, man.
Did your bus at least win the race?
No.
That's it.
Right. You almost lose your life for nothing. Los Angeles.
Wow. What would you, Harrison? We pulling your BMW car. What you got?
Yeah, but dry falling. I go on to school where it was like about, on average, 30 degrees Celsius. Never caught a cold. Decided to go out the junk canoe, not wear a cap. I had the flu for like 2 weeks.
That's what it's happened.
You let the drive catch you.
The drive catch me, babe.
To this day, I tell Jay, babe, make sure when it cold out, he has modicus. He says, make sure that drive don't catch you.
I tell him.
Right? Yeah, okay. So I see you. All right, so for me, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I had a pretty impressive collection of Kipling monkeys in high school. Like, I had like a different Kipling monkey for every, you know, every sort of week. Very sought after. They get teeth plenty of times. But,
I just wanted to say, there's
remember them Kipling days, boy?
It's hard commodity.
Yeah, that's jail currency. You could do anything with them.
Exactly. That's legit like jail currency. But, yeah, so today's episode is brought to you by Sanderlands, the only thing Bahamians associated with mental illness since 1973. They're just playing. But today we are talking about mental health in the Bahamas. And of course, it's a serious topic. You know, it affects everybody. But also, you find that it affects certain people in particular more than others. And so we thought it would be important to have a Bahamian therapist come on. You know, we don't want to be, you know, playful with the topic. You know, we want to have a real conversation about mental health, how that affect us as a culture, as a people, and, you know, are we mentally well as a society? Do we value it? Like, are many of us walking around undiagnosed? Yes, maybe. I don't know, right? Like, all of that is something we want to sort of get into today. So I guess my first question to you, Harrison, is like, you know, let's walk through this, like, you know, treat us like a 6-year-old. Like, psychology is a little nuanced, we know. So you're a therapist, right? And a counselor, but you're not a psychiatrist, right? Like,
right. I'm a cognitive behavior therapist. So I help people deal with what it is they're feeling by helping them change disruptive patterns of thinking. So quite literally, in order to sit in my chair, you have to be sane. So contrary to popular belief, you know, therapy, the therapy that I provide is not for people who are quote unquote not there or who aren't mentally and emotionally well.
Your head, like their head ain't no good.
Exactly. It ain't, because you know, that stigma I think is always going to be there whenever it comes to therapy and psychology until we as a collective learn to put strength down and see our issues for what they really are. So breaking into this culture was very difficult when I first started way back in 2011. Because, you know, on top of being a male, a young Bahamian male at that, what is it that I really have to offer people who've been going through things for years?
Right.
And I had to find a unique way to bridge the gap between the help people needed and the techniques that I was taught in school. And the best way that I could figure out how to do that was to take to social media. And that really kind of opened up the floodgates to show people there's solutions for a lot of things that we have going on. Like depression isn't just a feeling. It's a state of mind. Trauma is very real. And sometimes we dismiss how real trauma can be because of the standard to be strong, to push through it, especially as men, where we don't have those spaces to actually go through things, to feel things in the way that we need to. And so from a long time ago, I saw that need. And it just so happens that my father, he is a clinical psychologist, Dr. Wayne Thompson.
Not a legend.
Another legend, right?
Yeah. And
I'm here in the practice with him. And so it's really been a helpful thing to kind of break into this arena and kind of carve my own niche out, rebranding what mental health looks like while still showing people that they have options available to them.
Yeah, for sure. That's dope. I mean, you touch on a lot of the stuff we want to get into as we go on. But yeah, so I like the way you sort of define exactly what it is you do and how you help people, because people do have this idea of like you sitting down with the Joker from Dark Knight in this asylum, and you help and treat him, but you're not the one necessarily diagnosis, or can you diagnose?
No, so I will have to refer to a clinical psychologist or psychiatrist for a diagnosis. Right. And once I get that diagnosis, now I'm able to help give them treatment. Because even if you're taking medication, there's still therapy that a person often needs to walk through, you know, the triggers, the thinking patterns, the traumas that are still present in that person, even though they're being medically treated.
Right. So you're basically helping with the treatment side and the healing side. Once you know, you know, hey, I got some stuff going on with me, you're the person who come to the help them, like sort of work through that and explore that, right?
And actually more often than not, management, because you find that there's not a lot of cures for many things. Like you can't undo trauma, but you can learn how to manage it better, get ahead of it better, to respond to it better. That's where I come in.
Okay. Yeah. So just making sure we have an understanding of exactly, you know, what you do. And I get, you know, Jay kind of alluded to it, right? Like you hear people talk about in the culture when we're talking about mental health, is always, oh, this boy head ain't no good, or you know, something wrong with that boy, or you know, culturally, I don't think we tend to dive deeper. So, you know, obviously that's where mental health could come in. Like, I think for so many Bahamians, it's like we don't understand, like your niece might not just be miserable, she might be depressed, or your friend might not, you know, head swing, they might even be, you know, bipolar. So could you talk about like how the way things may look in a society for us, like who don't know, for instance, you don't know the symptoms, for instance, of bipolar. Right. We talk about like how tough that might be in the experience of your clients that explain like, hey, this is tough to navigate in society because people just don't understand. Is that like a thing?
Yeah, man, it's very common because, you know, a lot of people, they come in with a feeling and they may not necessarily know, is this feeling within range of something? Like, is this feeling normal? Is this feeling something I should be concerned with? And what I try to show people, you will never be able to support yourself until you learn how to feel properly. And so one of the first components about mental health is, do we have spaces where it's okay to feel without judgment? Can I express anger without judgment? Can I express anxiety without judgment?
Exactly.
If I don't have these spaces, then I have to cover a lot of these feelings under something that's ineffective, like strength, where I always have to be strong in the face of what I feel, and I never get to be honest about what it is I feel. So you find this leads to either breakdown or blow up.
Yeah.
And we finally see those two things emerge, and then we want to ask the question of what's happening there, but we're not seeing the symptoms. We're not seeing the potentiality for problems. You know, if you look at a yard and you see a large grouping up of like dry leaves, that would be considered a fire hazard. But the only time we would give concern is when the building is actually on fire, not the potential for it. Yeah. And so we got to get better at seeing that mental health is a whole lot more than just having a breakdown. It's quite literally the quality of your boundaries. It's your ability to feel content and to have peace. It's how you're regulating your relationships. Are you prioritizing them in the right way? And are you able to acknowledge where you are and then to be accountable by doing something to help you support yourself, whether it's through therapy, working out, changing your diet, taking time away from work, cutting some people off, adding some people in. Mental health encompasses all of those things. It's a whole lot more than just being, quote unquote, not stable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's dope. So, I mean, I think, like I say, you hear all these different expressions used in our culture because of the fact that we don't, you know, we don't often understand some of the other things that might be going on with a person. So I wanted to ask everyone now, like, what are some of the myths that you might hear out there about mental health and therapy in the Bahamian context? Like,
yeah, I love to hear this.
You know, like you get, obviously there's this one, like this pervasive one where it's like, oh, you weak man, you soft man, you soft if you a real man don't da 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 or whatever. Like, you know, that's what I sort of hear a lot. But what's some of the stuff y'all hear, Debbie?
I've heard, like, personally, like, backstory. Dude threatened to commit suicide several occasions. Never went through with it. Called me one night, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning. Bro, why sitting on the bridge? Come get me. Right? Left my house, pick him up. We drove for maybe 2 hours. I dropped him off. So I presented it to one of my boys, and he was like, "Wait, that dude only seeking attention, but like if he was gonna do it, he wasn't go through with it. You know, he only doing this for attention." I'm like, what kind of attitude is that to have? If someone legitimately having suicidal thoughts and we shrug it off as, oh, they just attention seekers, you know? And
yeah.
I thought it was crazy.
Attention seeking, definitely a thing. Like, I think you hear that, like, when your kids and all, like, if you, let's say you're going through something, you're distressed and you're trying to reach out to your mommy, like, oh, stop looking for attention or stop, you know? And that's a whole different story. That's trauma in and of itself, right? But yeah, okay.
Right.
Attention seeking is definitely one of them. What about you, Jay?
I think one of the biggest ones that we see in our Christian nation is just the total discredit for mental health and just accrediting it to like spiritual aspect or what's not, like,
yeah.
If you're depressed and that's demons, or right. you just gotta get that spirit off you. You need to drink some tea and pray. And it's like you're like
drink some tea and pray, that combination.
Yeah. Like I acknowledge Christ, I acknowledge like the spiritual world, but it's still like, no, like some things are not spirits. Like you wanting to hurt yourself isn't solely a demon. Like it could be something else. Like you being sad and depressed ain't just your deeds or nothing like that. It's still like no, like it could be mental health. So I feel like just that whole discrediting mental health awareness for spiritual awareness is a big thing.
That's powerful.
I could actually tell a story on that. I remember one time, I was going through it hard, and I went to my old lady, and I'm like, "Hey, mom, I just need to talk to you real quick." And maybe a few seconds in, my mommy shrugged me off, and she was like, "Just go pray about it." I was like, "What a sec! I come to you for real world advice. Yeah. You telling me to go pray?
Like,
I just want some advice, someone to listen to me. Pray that, like, that ain't helping me right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
bro, that hurt."
It's wild because, you know, you don't even need to be a mental health professional to validate like what someone is going through is real, you know.
Right.
Like, you just literally have to look at one human being to another to see that, hey, things ain't things right now. Like, let's be present in that, you know. And I feel like we're so discomfort averse. The minute people start going through something that makes us uncomfortable, we want to hurry up, get them out of that so we could feel.
Yeah, better. Absolutely. Like,
to support people who are going through things, it's learning how to be in the fire without always running away. And to know proof story about the guy on the bridge, it's attention seeking until it's not.
Right.
And then like when it's not, then it's action. But it's like we have a lot of opportunities to get ahead of that if we could learn to just see it for what it is. It's like, you get cancer early enough, it doesn't have to be stage four. But if you keep on ignoring the symptoms, when you finally go and get that check out, it may be terminal.
Yeah.
And I feel like because so much of what mental health is invisible, we wait, unfortunately, until symptoms are almost always non-negotiable to do something about it. But at that point, it may be too late.
How do we learn to, like, to see those signs? Like, how do we learn to, like, to get that level of awareness that, hey, like, I maybe should listen, or maybe I should advise him to talk to somebody? How do we, like, recognize the signs for something so, you know, invisible, like you say?
Like, yeah. How do you translate it from this boy freaking out? This boy is actually going through it and needs some help.
Yeah, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to engage with an unlearning, right? Like, it's not as easy to just tell someone to feel better or to stop tripping out. And when you say that, that's going to work. That's literally something that a person is going through, right? And so the first step is we got to be able to acknowledge things for what they really are. Instead of making jokes and making light about what we assume them to be, let's look at it for what it really is. Pain is pain, regardless of whether it's my daughter who fell off of her tricycle, or it's someone who was late on their bills again, or it's someone who's going through an experience where their house is about to be taken away. We like to compare apples and oranges, but it's really about what are you feeling? Not necessarily why are you feeling this, but what are you feeling? And if we could learn to just acknowledge that basic thing that exists in everybody, we'll soon start seeing that we're not as different as we think. So that's the first thing. We got to unlearn this judgmental behavior, that not everything is a demon, like Jay was saying, that many things are actually treatable conditions that we need to develop tools with to cope, to manage, and to process. And I think that once we can start doing that and people start speaking a little bit more about what their personal experiences have been with it, we can diminish that stigma as this being a negative, unreal thing. And it can start to hold real ground when it comes to treating things and making people feel better.
Yeah, for sure.
The difficulty too is, though, trying to pinpoint exactly what that feeling is you're feeling. Because sometimes trying to express in words what you're feeling is the challenging part.
Right.
And you don't see what that feeling is until a person acts on it. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh,
that's they call what this is. Emotional intelligence, right?
Like, right.
It's interesting because I think we use a lot of words interchangeably when really they're not. Like some of the big three words I see people often interchanging is frustration, anger, and annoyance, right? Because they almost seem like the same thing. But annoyance is when someone is doing something to you that you don't like. Frustration is when you know you have the ability to do something, but for some reason you're not producing those results. Anger is when a belief of yours has been violated. So you think about trying to solve frustration like it was anger. You're never going to find the results that you need because that's not an accurate description of what you're going through. Wow, so you see how because we don't spend a lot of time in what it is we're feeling, we don't even know how to communicate our needs properly.
But all of them got you by someone in the head. Wow, that's crazy.
If you're not careful, and it's like
you
get the same outcome, but totally different beginning. Wow. And we got to learn to catch it in the beginning because in the end, it really kind of all looks the same.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, so like just, I guess there's a lot of, like I said, unlearning to do and learning to do.
Sure.
But yeah, in that vein, like, let me ask like a silly question now. Like once again, like 35-year-old, what actually is therapy? Like how would you describe therapy to like, you know, James from Vinewood, like, Nado them from Bangalore, like who going through some stuff they don't know how to deal. How would you describe it to them when they might have these, you know, kind of, yeah, shout out Nado, like you owe me dollar. But how would you describe it to that to the common person, the everyday, you know, behemoth that don't necessarily know what therapy even is really?
Yeah, I would say it as simply as I possibly can, bro. Therapy is a better way of seeing and thinking. It doesn't necessarily solve the problem, but it can create different perspectives on a problem that we've never seen before. And those small nuances in terms of being able to see how I help myself, how I discourage myself, how I make it harder for myself, how I self-sabotage, many times these things are covered under the disguise of familiarity. For example, in certain families, it's a normal thing to suppress how you feel. So an individual growing up in that family may not see that as a problem. So they need someone outside who they can depend on, who they can trust to show them, hey, this is a thing that you may not realize you're doing here. And it's not just someone talking. It's literally walking someone through a mental process of seeing why they need to think differently about something. So people often would reduce my profession to just talking, right? And I'm like, it's a whole lot more than just talking.
You're spitting up your mouth, man.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm trying to get this person to see how they could empower themselves to do what it is I am suggesting they are capable of doing. Because if I told you right now that you could join the NBA, you may not believe that. You may say, Harrison, I wash up. I ain't got my knees like I used to. But it's like, if I can walk you through the training process, if I can walk you through the raising money process, getting out there process, you may start to see opportunities that you couldn't see before.
Right.
And here's where a therapist comes in, because now this is a safe space where we could actually talk about things without the fear of judgment. Because when you talk in a Nato, I may have to omit certain details so you don't think about me as a soft bite. And in therapy, I don't need to be performing like that. I need to get the raw, the real, the truth out so that I could actually get a trusted opinion on what it is I should do as a response to this.
Right. So you basically say Nato could come in there and don't have to, you don't have to be a gun dog for this 30-minute session, right? You could be a person, right? Right. You could be a dude who like, who heard about some things and stuff like that, right? Like, I think I really like the way you put that. Like, you don't have to necessarily perform
right
in this
right.
moment. For me personally, with when I did therapy, I think one of the most underrated parts of it was like, you get to say things you never really said before. Like, you things you live with, things that you know to be true inside yourself. But like, you know what I'm saying? Who are telling this to, right? Like,
right.
And so just being able to say things and talk to a person and express things that you never even verbalized before. Right. I mean, like, is underrated. Like, it really is really helpful, for sure.
You know what you bring up? Sorry, Proof, you go ahead, bro.
Yeah, as I was about to say, MCK. But here's the stigma attached to that. I remember the first time I decided to go, well, it was suggested that I go to therapy. My first response was, I don't know this dude, so why I can go sit up in his office and spill all the business about myself? Like, why? Are you talking to a complete stranger about me?
We ain't know me, game.
What benefit would that serve me? And then I know who he or she can tell that to. Like that was my thought process.
Yeah.
Until I actually sat down and did it. And to your point, it's freeing when you verbalize things that you've been internalizing for so long.
That's powerful, bro, because when you don't get to speak about it, it always exists in your mind as something I could manage myself.
Right.
There's a level of reality you can't deny once you put something into the atmosphere. And that's why you really need a safe space. And that's why you find men struggle to be vulnerable. Because we try to put a lot of real things into the atmosphere. And when we're called soft or weak or we're emasculated for that, we learn that the cost of honesty is always punishment. So we learn how to tolerate, right? But I say
this. That's a bar. That's a bar, bro. The cost of honesty is always punishment. Yeah.
The absence of a symptom doesn't mean that we're well. Right? So just because a man doesn't break down on Monday, that doesn't mean he's well. Just because a man doesn't walk the road on Tuesday, that doesn't mean he's well. And how many times do we reduce our mental health as men to the absence of symptoms? You know, like, I ain't crying. Like, you ain't see me yelling. You ain't see me go threaten to kill myself. So I straight. Yeah.
That's so true.
We minimize that because we look at tolerance as a marker of real masculinity. To what degree could you take cut hair? And it's like, we got to really reframe some of these things, because tolerance is not an indicator of mental and emotional wellness. It's our ability to actually acknowledge those things.
That's crazy. I have
a question on that same point. For you, Harrison.
Yeah.
What is your take on how societal pressures impact men's willingness to seek help or seek therapy?
It's wild, bro, right? Because as men, we're born into this structure where we know what to do before we know who we are. Okay, I could break that down. When we are born into this world, there's already rules that are waiting on us to adapt to. How we need to look, how we need to sound, how much money we need to make, the kind of strength we need to possess. These things are waiting on us. And so we get good at performing on those things, right? So we perform on those things right on up until age 18. Because 18 is usually when real relationships start developing for men. And the relationship actually reveals that that man is not as healthy as he thought. That forces that man to do a lot of introspect, and he realizes, I know what to do, but I don't know who I am. Like, I know how to go to work and make money, but I never got to connect to my passion. I know what it is to provide and to protect, but I never got to understand what is it that I really want in this world. And so it's almost like at 18, there's a rebirthing where we have to go back to a lot of things we neglected in our lives and kind of ask ourselves, did I really get a chance to know me? Because in the absence of knowing who you are, the standard now becomes your truth. If I don't know who I am and you test me when we out in public, the standard is now telling me, but I got to deal with you. Yeah. But knowledge of self is what gives me the power to push back against that standard, to say, even though society is telling me that this is how I need to act here, my knowledge of self is telling me that this is actually what it is I need to be doing. And you can do so unapologetically. So you find a lot of young men, you know, our culture, they're acting in these ways, not because, not just because that's the environment, but because they don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. When we can get back to knowing who we are, our worth, our value, and the things that are literally at stake when we're not taking care of ourselves, so many of these symptoms and ills of society will fade away. So we got to get back to knowledge of self.
And I just to chime in, I feel like a lot of things that we pass down from generation to generation and don't really identify or see the negative impacts. So when I think about children, the whole children should be seen and not heard, or you see children just silenced or sent away. When as they're let them be themselves, let them express themselves. Like, or if you, like, say if you too active, they say, oh, you want, like, you have too much sugar. Like they try to stop without really identifying, like, okay, who is this person? Like, this might be a child, but who is this person? He's active. He's hyper. He might be good in sports or something like that. They said that. And just not giving children the freedom to be themselves and then go from there. I feel like once you have the freedom to just be, then you kind of, that starts the process and figure out who you are, knowing what you like from dislike, knowing exactly like which causes and activities resonate with your heart more so than others.
You put up a good point, BJ, because, you know, boys are chronically misdiagnosed as being ADHD and ADD. When really they just have lazy parents who didn't create a space for them to be what it is they needed to be. So imagine being a young boy, inheriting your entire childhood, that you're disruptive, that you got a problem listening. Then you grow up into a teenager here, and that it gets reinforced by teachers now on top of family. And now, of course, you get in trouble in that. You become a young man, trouble in society. You start to associate a lot of things to authority. All simply because you never had an opportunity to just be.
Yep.
It seems like Bahamians always have to be something, even when no one is asking them to be something.
Yeah.
And so if we don't learn to create those spaces in our families where it's okay for one person to be into art and another person to be into medicine, and those two kids be equal, then we'll always have this unbalanced society where we constantly feel like we have to abandon passion for safety. And it's like the only
way is going deep now.
Passion.
Yeah, you're going deep now, as you're talking about now, the way that affect, like, you know, how we think as a people, right? Like you say, like, if you like to do ballet as a man, what you is over here? You know what I mean? Like, they're looking at you in the same way.
That's those societal pressures right there. That's the expectation of who we should be as. I guess that's where gender roles come in. And I think that plays a role in how we perceive our mental health as well.
Yeah, Because we know the cost of what it means to step outside of them rules. You're going to stand out. You're going to get ostracized. You're going to get punished. But again, that's why knowledge of self is so powerful. If I know I love the color pink, right? Shout out to Cameron, who originally started
Killer Cam.
It's like, if I know that this is what I'm into and it doesn't affect who I am as a man, my sexuality, then I could step out boldly. But if I feel like stepping out boldly on this is going to cost me something, then I wouldn't trade that off.
Yeah, these days you can't have a dinner party. They say, why? What you having a dinner party for, huh?
You
try to eat food on your birthday? What's wrong with you?
Why you have a birthday?
Why you have a birthday? You know, and obviously that's pretty like male centric, but you know, the truth is the same for females too, right? Like this idea of I mean, I actually feel sometimes I just think about women, not like that, but sometimes I think about what women go through in the sense of a woman can't walk down the street without being harassed in some way, form, or shape. And as an introvert, I feel your pain. Like, I don't know what the hell I would do if every time you come with jealous, you're getting bothered. To a certain extent, that you have these expectations of like what a woman should be and stuff. So, you know, like this ain't exclusive to men. Like, there's definitely something, you know, everybody experiences.
That's what happens when you have unbalanced culture. So when culture doesn't support something, if you call it out, you're going to inherit a lot of chafing because of that. So if I decide to call out one of my boys for flirting with a woman, and I know he's in a relationship, the culture doesn't support that.
You're like, mom, baby, what's wrong with you?
Right. So the totality of that rests upon me. Like, Harrison, why you carrying on like that? What's the bro code for, bro?
Mm-hmm.
And you can now see that when we don't have a strong culture, a lot of falsehoods get we allow a lot of falsehoods to become permissible. And so a lot of times we have a cultural issue that doesn't support a lot of these movements. That's why you find things can start, but they don't last the test of time because they're not supported by culture. Everybody says it's okay to talk to someone, but then when you look at what the avenues really are and the support that we put behind that, you can't find it. So what does it really say we support, right? It puts the pressure on people to help themselves and then to wear the weight of judgment at the same time. That's not how it's supposed to work. Yeah. So we have to do better as a society when it comes to being accountable, when it comes to actually being about the things that we preach, not necessarily just looking like we're about it. And that's going to require us to choose the inconvenience of what better actually means.
Yeah, that leads me right to straight to my next question, which is really what we think the most toxic thing about the culture is. If you know, you being an expert, what would you say? Is there more to that? Like, would you say is the most toxic aspect of our culture? If you had to, like, you probably have a list, but your top one or two most toxic thing about the culture today.
I'm not going to say Bahamians own it, but I'm going to say that we have an interesting twist on it, and that is the permissible culture of cheating when you're unhappy. Right? I find that this is not just Bahamians; this is a global thing. But of course, Bahamians are very vocal people. We are very headstrong people. So when we believe in something in our feelings, we almost always will look to support that in some way, shape, or form. So you'll find the biggest issue for commitment is you don't get to get out of uncomfortable feelings. You have to learn to work through them. That's what commitment means.
Right.
So when you think about the readiness to commit, you got to be a certain kind of man. You got to be a certain kind of woman who's almost mastered the art of self-happiness. Because if you start looking for people to be things that they are not, you're always going to be looking for this perfect person to save you from discomfort, and they don't exist, right? So one of these aspects is learning that discomfort does not always mean bad, and good feelings does not always mean good.
Yeah.
This is one of the markers of good mental health. When you have weak mental health, you unintentionally pursue happiness as the king of all emotions. And I don't have anything against happiness, but happiness is not morally attached to what's good. Right? I know a lot of people
definitely not
doing a line of coke, breaking up people's homes, and you know, thieving and plundering and all kind of things, right?
Yeah.
And we know that bad feelings are not always attached to what's bad. My gym workout requires me to get up early in the morning. I have to eat a certain way. I have to take certain supplements. That doesn't feel good, but I have to have knowledge that this is good.
Yeah.
So when it comes to commitment to anything, commitment to your job, commitment to your spouse, commitment to your duties, you have to understand that that includes discomfort. And if you don't have a space for discomfort, you're going to look at it and mislabel it as negative when really it's just uncomfortable. Mm. Now, how many things have we mislabeled in our life as negative just because it didn't feel good?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so that's what you're saying is definitely like a toxic thing, behavior you sort of see home a lot, right?
Excuses
for cheating, right? But what about you, Jay? You have something that you consider like one of the more toxic things about the culture?
For me, I feel like it's not questioning certain things just because they've been in the culture long. So is that like, no, a lot of times we have behaviors or things that slip in, and it's like we come from a certain like racist, xenophobic type of background where it's like, no, like we done progress now where we could get rid of some of these things. The whole beating children is the aspect where it's like, yo, like we can really look into this now and see if we really need the culture.
We could revise this.
Yeah. So is that like, I feel like it's toxic. Like we don't know when to let things go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. Like, certain things that in our culture, we don't even know like why we like that. Like, we don't even know why we do certain things no more, but it's just because that's the way it always been.
Why
government workers don't work.
They incentivize, but that's another episode.
That's a whole episode.
But to break it down, it's they're like, that's the culture, and that isn't something that they want to let go, because you get young people in there, they come in, and then our students see like, hey, it's only me working.
They get indoctrinated.
And they get indoctrinated with it, and now it's the same way. What we really need to get a little specifically is the whole stop crying before I give you something to cry about.
Yeah.
The greater fear helps you with the lesser fear. We never understood that.
So that one. That's like the one where my mom used to say, you know, children starving in Africa, and I used to be like, what the hell? Like, I never understood the correlation, but like, I would say that, like, we have these like ideology that we push, but we don't ever explain. So it's like, the idea is that, oh, if you have something and other people don't, so you should, you know, appreciate what you have. But it was just like, you know, my children starving in Africa. I was like, I don't know, five? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, what does this have to do with anything, right? So anyway, that's just me telling it.
Why do we always have to go to Africa, though? Like, why do we can't have, like, right up the road?
Only starving in Africa.
Like, that's our closest correlation. You can go, like, around the corner.
I tell you.
That's like, crazy.
Like, cross the road, like, could whatever you got to need.
Tiffany just asked us for sugar yesterday. Amen. But, you know, what would you prove? What would you say is the most toxic thing with the culture?
I think one of our most toxic cultural habits is we don't take anything seriously. We make joke out of everything. Like, we could crack a joke about the most serious thing. Why? Half the times, my opinion on that is, I feel like we be deflecting. We could relate to it, and to not draw attention to ourselves, let me crack a joke. Let me try to play this, you know what I mean?
The coping mechanism sometimes, right? Too, whatever. But that brings me to like, but I'm like the thing where, you know, a young girl will go missing. Right. Well, for my start of the show, I want to talk about this. A young girl will go missing, and people will be in the comments like, oh, she by mine. I find that to be so despicable. Like, even if there's like instances where we know, right, culturally we know, yes, it happens or whatever. But imagine for a second your child missing and people in the comment section talking about she looked like she like big man and all of the stuff like that. Like, I find that so disgusting to me. Like, that show, like, what, something wrong, like, mentally as a people, like, something wrong. That's, to me, that's a symptom. That's like a red flag to me. And yeah, that's super toxic. Like, that's whole, let's get the person the benefit of the doubt. Suppose something happened to the kid.
Right.
I just find that so, that's so gross to me, bro. Like,
you know what's wild about that?
Mm-hmm.
So we judge as a way to preserve energy, believe it or not, right? Like, if I don't have to spend as much time thinking about the why, I can jump straight to the conclusion. Huh. And so what you find is people are very lazy mentally and emotionally when it comes to doing due diligence and going beyond just the surface, right? People don't know how to suspend their judgment because that requires effort. I'm not saying that people can't do it, they just don't want to. And so what happens is you find these comments, they almost come automatically because we don't ever want to stop and question things and to actually go deep because it requires effort.
Yeah.
The average Bahamian person is on this rat race. They're quite literally living from just paycheck to paycheck, one moment to another moment. So quite literally, people are tapped out. They don't have the energy to actually give to these things to think deeply enough beyond just the surface. It's not making an excuse. It's just showing how on both ends of society, we have issues that's now creating this bottleneck where we need salvation. I think we got to understand, for example, like with the CYC movement, right? Many times we just be in the wrong.
That don't matter, Harrison.
That's a very unpopular opinion. That's an unpopular opinion.
Come at you for that. Right? And it's like, we don't ever want to stop to ask ourselves, just because the majority is saying this, does that make it right? And we find it so easy to just jump on the bandwagon between what popular people are saying, not even if it's real, but just because they're popular, we're going to take what they're saying now and we're going to take that as truth and gospel. Where's the suspending of judgment to really go deeper than just feelings?
Yeah.
I feel like because we don't naturally do that, everything is a joke.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a really, really good point. Even like the idea of preserving that energy, because could you imagine what the other side of she ain't my big man is? Like, it's scary right now. That might affect me, right? That might affect my niece or my cousin. So it's easier for me to say, oh, she by someone else, this is a promiscuous young girl. So that makes a lot of sense. But that wasn't even actually my most toxic thing. That just Jay triggered me. But I would say it's actually something Jay said earlier about like religion, right, and spirituality, and how we could basically, as a society, minimalize the emotional side of things.
Yeah.
Through that spiritual lens, right? Like, it's like, okay, deacon rule, yeah, God is good all the time, but I feel deeply hurt. Like, the expectation of like being tough, even when I did therapy, and I grew up in a church, so, and I was explaining things like, you know, being long suffering, and my therapist is like, being what? You know, long suffering, and like, and you know, obviously there's nobility in it, but he's also, that sounds really, really, you know, hard. And it is, you know, being long suffering is hard. And I think if we could acknowledge, even in those spaces, like churches and stuff, like, it's hard, bro. It's hard to have faith and to live out the faith and to do these different things. Mm-hmm. And that requires an understanding of like emotions and stuff like that. So that's what I think is one of the most toxic things, is like how, like Jay was saying, is you could easily demonize something with like, yeah, I still here, right? Like, well, maybe I'll pray for you. It's like, cool, I appreciate it, but like, what I doing now? Like, what do we do right now?
Bro, you caused me want to rewrite my verse. Like, when you want a song with J. Cole, that made me think about something that I totally forgot, and it's victim blaming. Like, we put a lot of emphasis on the victims to do things without support, without help, without a foundation. And what do we expect to come out of that besides more trauma? So let me rescind my first verse and let me come back with something a little harder, but victim blaming.
Victim blaming, definitely. I mean, I think that's a cultural staple, eh?
Yeah, but
you know, the government need to do something more. Like, okay. That's how we live our life.
Yeah.
So just like a couple more questions. I just, these like curiosity questions now. Like,
okay, go for it.
We got therapists, but sitting in front of old people. Let's go to therapy. Like, yes, your experience.
I got a client in their 80s coming to me.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, that's currently.
That's encouraging. I thought maybe I have hope with the old boomers now. That ain't even a boomer. That's a boomer. 80.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's dope. Okay. So there's a length of breath of people coming to therapy.
Yeah, man.
The flip side of that is you find that a lot of younger persons tapping into the whole therapy culture, no?
Yeah, it's still dominated by women, mostly. However, I have seen an uptick in men coming to therapy with me, specifically since COVID. I think COVID made it hard for a lot of us to continue on as though things are normal.
I can relate. It's like,
yeah, some realities that we found in COVID were just unseeable. You can't come out of that and be the same, man. Like, you saw your money drop. You saw your relationships crumble. You saw your self-esteem plummet, weight gain. Like, you can't lie to yourself when you look in the mirror that everything cool. So COVID really was an uncomfortable blessing for a lot of men. And I was proud to see that a lot of younger men were seeking therapy as a result of that.
Okay. COVID was the reason that pushed me to do therapy. Yeah. I had a lot of time to sit with myself, and it was uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
That's real, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, my next curiosity question. What would you say is the number one issue people tend to come to you with? Now, I know you sound like a relationship expert, so I imagine that's like up there, but anything outside of that, like an issue that just kind of seems to be pervasive in the culture?
Believe it or not, imposter syndrome is probably, like, individually number two. People come in feeling like I'm not where I'm supposed to be. They have jobs, but they feel unqualified for them. They know they have skills, they know they have talents, but for some reason they're not banking on themselves, they're not taking risk with themselves. And I think a lot of people have knowledge of self, but they don't have validation of worth. So they play it safe.
Okay, cool. You reach a bar.
That's not a bar.
You reach a bar.
Yeah, but it's one of them things that I think people have low-key tried to deal with quietly through achievement. Mm-hmm. Like, the more degrees I can get, the more certifications I can get. And it's like, Definitely. You don't need no more. You need to stop to work.
Yeah.
I think we just want that constant flow of validation that I am worthy, whether it's worthy of love, worthy of this pay, worthy of accolades. And I think if we can get people back to that place where they look internally for that instead of externally, then we can stop giving so much of our power away to people who don't hold weight in our life.
Man, yeah, that's really good, bro. Yeah, that's imposter syndrome is just me on a Tuesday. You know, I think everybody can relate to that. Like, no matter how successful or whatever promotion or whatever good things going on, like I always say, like the next step is now like being okay with even success, right? Like you might get a job, and then okay, now you have to navigate how to do the job. Like, you feel like, now, how I get this job? I'm missing getting this job, right? Like, I think, it's good to know that obviously you're not alone, but okay, so that's a major issue that seems to find itself. All right, any other questions, guys? You have for Arison?
That's it. That's it from my side. I feel like it was a heavy one today.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of the culture, and like we have vacation leave and sick leave, and like other countries they offer a mental health day. Is that something that you see can take root in our country?
Yeah, man. I've gotten three organizations to restructure time off, paid time off, through mental health.
It's great.
Because it's just no way more is being demanded of us in times when we have less resources and less support, and the human product is going to be okay through all of that.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like I got to do so much more than what my father did, even though, you know, what he did is, I'm not minimizing it, but it's like, now I got to manage like social media perception. Like, I got to manage. Yeah.
Different.
I got a wife who stays at home. I have a 4-year-old kid. I'm the only breadwinner of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I am further along than my father was. But the pressures ain't no lighter. And it's like, some days I literally am operating at max capacity. And if someone just walk into this building whistling Dixie, like that may be it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get people to see, like, people ain't just complaining and need to suck it up when they're talking about certain things. It's like, if you want your productivity and your bottom line to remain intact, and you need to take care of the people who are helping you make money.
It's an investment. Yeah. Dope.
All right, cool.
Yeah, my last question, I made me remember. The last question, because for real, it's done. Like, our boss doesn't see. But would you say that we value mental health as a culture right now in its current state? Do you think we as a people value mental health, or do you think there's some ways to go?
So, you know, you got the, I forget how to say it properly, but you got the available balance and the ledger balance on your bank account. It's trendy right now to have a therapist. It's trendy to say, oh, you know, my therapist said, oh, you know, I tell my therapist about you, and it's like, cool. That's the ledger balance. But what's really available there, we still have a lot of work to do. It's growing in terms of respect, I think, because the undeniable truth about the fabric of society is that it's not getting better. So there will always be business in the realm of mental health. But in terms of seeing it as something we can own, we still have a lot of work to do regarding awareness. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot of work to do regarding being able to share our stories without fear of judgment. I think we need these elements to help people see, like, if Harrison going to therapy, if this one going to therapy, and this is what this person actually gained from that, this actually makes sense as something to invest in, not just something we do after the fact, after a blow up, after a breakup. Harrison, come save my life, please. I just gone through the worst day of my life. If we could treat it almost like vitamin C, it's like, take it before you get sick.
Yeah.
And don't think that just because you ain't get sick yet that you need to stop. Like, you're probably not sick because you've continued to go.
Yeah.
If we could adopt that same approach, man, I think things would be a lot better regarding the percent of therapy.
You know what I
before,
think?
Before it's not gone in the lampo, yeah. Go ahead, bro.
What would be dope is, you know how when you get hired for a new job, your first question is about the perks. More often than not, what insurance, you know, what my insurance policy is like.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to include therapy sessions as a part of the product offering, the perks, I think that'd be dope.
Yeah, bro. I got one company I'm working with right now, and we are experimenting with it. What happens when you make therapy free for your employees? You know, it's like we
ideal dream come true.
Yeah, man. It's almost like, you know how your car is supposed to get serviced like maybe every 3 months, depending on how old it is. And sometimes that 3 months time will come across and you'll say, well, the car's still working. So what I really need to go get the service for, I could save that $200 and put that into something else that's more urgent. Yep. And I think that perception that the only thing that's important is what's totally urgent, that's really stopping a lot of us from being preventative. And if we can get back to seeing the connection between symptoms, I think we can be a little bit more proactive when it comes to steering clear of certain catastrophes that are definitely avoidable if we just get there earlier.
Yeah,
definitely.
I appreciate your time, bro. A lot of gems dropped, a lot of bars dropped on this one. I wish I had like the funks button. But definitely needed. I think a conversation we need to continue to have. But before we let you go and chill with the fam, we got some business handles. So this season, what we've been doing is something called Culture Icon, right? So we've been nominating different people who we think deserve, you know, the title of a Culture Icon of the Year. So we each nominated like two icons. We've been building a case for them. And through the process of elimination, we're going to have one, you know, last standing. And so we got to do this real quick. We go on through some greats. We're ready. Even Hubert Ingham didn't make the cut. Who's the nominees left standing? I think. Well, we got
Don Miller.
Don Miller,
the golden one.
We have the late great Singing Bishop.
He's still in the running, very much so.
And the late great Miles Monroe.
Wow. Reggie ain't in this.
Hey.
We debated on it. He's an honorable mention.
Reggie ain't had enough time in the league.
Reggie has gotten them, but not he hasn't gotten them that like that. Not just yet. He still has some getting to do. Okay. So and then we have places too, right? Like actually the winner of the Culture Icon establishment or institution is a fact. Matter of fact, you say it, Jay. You love them so much.
The cultural iconic place, the winner was Super Value. Now,
the Bahamian supermarkets, right?
Which one?
The location, it varies depending on the person, but that just show you how iconic they is because they suit everybody. Because so if you is Shaniqua from Colin Gates is the thing, but if you is Michelle, who's been to private school, Cable Beach might be a thing. So you know,
I pray to God we got a jack from.
Don't forget about Laquelle and Raquan. They grew up out east, so Winton is their favorite one. So Super Value.
Give Jay a bag, please. We've been working on. All right, so
but back to the nominees.
Back to the nominees. The late great Miles Monroe, great leader, world respected writer and author. I'm not giving up on Dr. Miles, so I know y'all can convince me otherwise. Y'all make y'all a case.
Okay.
That's heavy.
I mean, that ain't my case. Hold on. The nominee is off.
Second Bishop
with Don Miller has Harrison as the guest. Who do you vote for? Because you're the tiebreaker. You could be the hold on. But we can let
before you vote. Before you vote. It is well himself. He sang our honorary national anthem, right? And the man is a philanthropist. He out there feeding people, man. He out there feeding.
I watch one video of him cooking grandma rice.
Bishop putting in work. In the big part, right?
But
no man's he out there feeding.
So and he's a police officer now.
Oh, right. He's a reserve.
Okay, he's a reservist. That was the singing Bishop, and yeah, it is well, and all that good stuff, right? But think about it. When the straw market is burning down, who is there?
There was only one man.
Who was there?
What?
When we had an election with a viable third party, the first time we've ever seen something like this, who was there to walk us through that? Who had the nation captivated? Hanging on by the words from his mouth, entertaining us and educating on us. Because I never know what a Kushikamangalis was before Darren Miller.
And I think y'all even forgetting about all the hurricane coverages too. When he tell us the water to the roof, it wasn't quite to the roof, but the point is he was telling us.
That was a metaphor. See, Darren's a poet.
He was locked in.
Boy, listen, Jay, I ain't gonna lie. I think it was literally last week I taught my little girl to say Kochimagogulus. And it had to click in her mind where that came from, you know. That was Darren Miller.
Generational iconicness. And then MCK, who you vote? Who you vote with?
The late great Dr. Miles. He's written many books. A lot of people. If your favorite leaders are referencing him, your favorite pastors are referencing him. I just saying, pastors biting them. Pastors is biting them. Famous world international pastors. So I mean, that's enough of me. I don't know. Does Darren Miller have 12 books?
All right.
No, I just asked him, does Darren Miller have 12 books? That's all right.
You can't. Huh? You losing that one.
Does Stinking Bishop Lee read a book of hymns or something? I miss it.
Have our honorary national anthem. He ain't need no book.
Honorary
national anthem. Books with how much people he feed, though.
All right.
Boom.
The vote is in. Harrison.
It's tough.
Out of the three candidates,
we have to eliminate one.
Who do you vote to leave?
To leave.
So you gotta eliminate one.
See that? She say zero just now?
You know what?
As
much as I respect the great Darren Miller, I'll never forget when he left ZNS for the first time. And he for a period of time in our culture, bro, we were without leadership. I don't know if I could forgive something like that. Because he come back, right? But that period, that trauma, Stepped away from the microphone, I think Darren Miller may have to walk again.
Oh man. Well, there you have it. This man is a therapist. He know what he's talking about. All right. And so, Darren, while we appreciate you and all of your great contribution, who was really sweating, the fire almost burned you and all. We'll catch you on the next one. And the man left standing, Dr. Miles Monroe, and Singing Bishop Boy, I don't know, this is a tight one.
Well, yeah, this is a tight one.
What?
So, Jay, appreciate you for coming through again, bro. That's this episode of Culture Quest. Jay looked like he ready to go crawl up in the fetal position. It's okay, bro. It'll be okay.
It is well.
It is well, bro.
Until next time, link up.
Link up.